Hi, right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this. Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
It's Last Night from the Strokes, from their debut album, Is This It? One of the most hungover sounding songs I know, in honor of the overtime game last night.
So we played some highlights earlier today from Eric, was the flagship station for 90 for the Grizzlies. We get to do that. We've got Eric's call. And somewhere, I don't know, maybe it was in the third quarter, he called a shot. They got to do this. The Shotner's shot of the game. It was a Santi three that tied it at 97.
It was the banked in one.
It was the banked in. That's what it was. It was the banked in three. So, all right, Chris, in retrospect, you were in charge of picking the Shotner's shot of the game with the full advantage of hindsight. What was the shot of the game?
Oh, I think it probably has to be Ja's shot to force overtime. The sort of like, listed as 18 foot, but I don't think that's right. He was through it at the free throw line. Sort of like, I don't know, 14 foot leaner almost, yeah. Double clutch leaner with 2 seconds to go to force overtime. There are a lot of candidates, I agree, but I think that's got to be the one for me.
Yeah, I think that's right. But you would include Brandon's tip, right? And Ja's three. Yep. And the dunk at the end with the assist from Ja. Those would others that would. That would leap to mind. It was drunk, and it was fun. And it was, I don't know, obviously Ja was terrific down the stretch. What did you make of Ja's night?
I think the Ja's night was a journey.
It was
a novel unto itself. I mean, so, with that game, so much happens in the fourth quarter and overtime that like the rest of the game feels like a year ago. And you sort of focus when games are tight, you focus on what happens at the end. And like, it's the kind of thing with the Grizzlies, and this relates to Ja, but the Grizzlies put themselves in a position of having to play a close game that maybe they didn't need to put themselves in that position. But then once put in that position, it gave them the opportunity to like for lots of, you know, clutch plays and good stuff to happen. And Ja was sort of central to that journey. I know Phoenix was like, you know, inviting him to shoot the three and they're not guarding him and he's wide open. And when you're wide open, you shoot. But at some level, you have to pressure the defense, not just take what they give you because they're giving you something for a reason.
Right.
And I think he settled for a lot of shots he didn't need to settle for in the first half. I feel like sort of what we talked about yesterday, I just think physically it's harder for him to get past defenders and get over defenders and get to his spots than it has been previously. And I felt like because of the labor that was involved and just the struggle, the greater struggle than has been the norm for him to get to certain spots, he was settling for these jumpers. And I think him settling for those shots and the team playing a little bit too casual in defense sort of put them in the position of being 10 down, you know, in the middle of the third quarter. And then they started playing at that point. And they played pretty great, but even then they needed luck. They needed Grayson Allen and Bol Bol to miss free throws to even have a shot there. So there was a lot there. In terms of Ja, I think the way he played down the stretch and into overtime, even then, like he stopped. He hit the 1-3, obviously, but he stopped settling. He was attacking. He was drawing fouls. He was getting in the lane. He was making plays. It still wasn't like it wasn't the electric. Like I'm just physically dominating defenders. But he was getting to spots and making plays. And even if he's only 90% of his best self physically, he's still quicker than 90% of other guards. You know, 90% of Ja is better than 90% of other guards. And so there's sort of that adjusting to what you can do now and doing that well instead of settling for the bad shots. And I think that's what happened down the stretch. It wasn't the electric, oh my God, Ja's overwhelming this team. It was Ja's finding a way to get to the lane and make plays. And I think that's what the team needs from him. He's probably not going to be the guy. Who knows? Playoffs are 2 months away. Maybe he can get better physically by then. But right now, today, he's not the guy who's going to score 49 in a playoff game. And they don't need him to be that because the team around him is good enough. They just need him to be a guy who's maxing out what he can be right now. And I think that's what we saw in the fourth quarter in overtime.
It's an interesting point because we've always wondered with Ja. It was this electric physical ability that was, in addition to other things, that separated him. And we have wondered how lasting that will be. You know, when you age and as you get into your career, smaller guard, whatever else. And who knows if it's an interesting question as to whether what we're seeing now in terms of that slightly diminished 90% physically Ja is a product of recent injuries or if it's also foreshadowing of like this is what figuring out how to be effective when you are only, in fact, more explosive than 90% and not 100% of the league, maybe what he has to live with, like a pitcher who's got a little off his fastball.
It's a very pertinent question. It's a question I just saw a fan ask me on social media last night. And my response, the question was, do you think that this is permanent? Like that this sort of slight diminishment in his athleticism? And my response was, I don't think so. He's 25, not 29, right? He's 25. I think this is the result of the hip and shoulder injuries that he's had this season. Of course, that begs the question of, can he avoid those kind of injuries, right? Even if you get fully past that going into next season. But I have always been a little bit more optimistic about his age curve than some. I had this discussion with Nate Duncan on his podcast at the beginning of the season, previewing the team. Now, the fact that Josh shooting hasn't come along, I think, is a problem in this regard because you need to see the shooting come along better. That will help on your age curve. But even without the shooting, it's not just about being like faster, quicker, and jumping higher than other people. And he jumped pretty high on the dunk, right?
Yes,
but
he's
an open space. He's an open space. That's different from like attacking physicality of a defense, right? With Ja, it's not just about the physical thing. It's also about the vision he has, which is extraordinary. Uh-huh. And like that's not going anywhere. And it's about his feel for the game and his feel for the tight spaces. And I think, you know, this is why maybe that they get back, if Edie becomes a better screener, they get back a little bit more of that next season. His ability to sort of to squeak into tight spaces and feel the defense and to just have a feel for finishing stuff in the lane, have a feel for setting up other players. I think the spark of genius I talk about with him is not about his athleticism. It's about an extra quality he has beyond his athleticism. And I think because he does have that, I feel a little bit better about it, even if he loses a little bit of his fastball. And also, like I think he is better defensively this season, and that is more about focus and demeanor than it is about raw athleticism. I think, you know, the playmaking, the improved defense, the feel for the game, all of that stuff, he can be an all-star player, you know, a great player without absolutely overwhelming everyone athletically all the time.
And by the way, he's becoming an even ever better free throw shooter. It was 14 of 14 last night. And if you look at his career trajectory, this is pretty easily his best free throw shooting year at 83%. He's had years where he shot 72% from the field. It's interesting, though, because the three-point shooting, and it's been particularly spotty recently, but this is, except for last year when he really didn't play, right? Right now, this is his worst three-point shooting season of his career. Because as you look into the future, yes, all the brilliant ability is to see things other people can't see, his passing, all of that, the wizardry will stand him in good stead. It does feel like it's going to have to be paired with better shooting, doesn't it? And he hasn't had off seasons to work on his shooting.
Yeah, I mean, not only did he was he injured last off season? His injury was on his right shoulder, which is his shooting. So like, there's that. And so I think that's probably going to need to be a big focus if it's summer coming up. I don't know what the numbers. I mean, he shot 2 of 14 or 1 of 14 or whatever ridiculous number from three last night. This being his worst three-point shooting season, that was not true like 3 or 4 games ago or whatever.
Right.
And so that number, I mean, you're talking about a number that fluctuates within other like fairly low numbers, right?
Right.
And so like we'll see where it ends up at the end of the year. And so I don't have any expectation that's going to necessarily change. It'll vary game to game. I mean, he'll have some good games. But I think he has to not – that needs to be a better part of his game going forward. For the rest of this season,
it is what it is.
Not,
yeah.
Yeah, and I would not be taking 15 of them, you know? Right, I just pass the ball to somebody else and let Jaren go one-on-one or whatever instead of settling for the wide-open three sometimes.
Yeah, he was 2 of 14. Okay, in terms of, you said they made it a close game that maybe shouldn't have been. Were there worrisome things within it?
I wouldn't say worrisome. I just thought they played. I thought Jock took some bad shots he didn't need to take, settled for some shots. Maybe he's not alone, but he was the main one with the threes. And I just thought the defense was a little too casual. I think they were not physical enough. That's kind of a soft Phoenix team. And I think one of the concerns people have about the Grizzlies is they're kind of a soft Grizzlies team a little bit. And I thought they should have been more physical on both ends of the floor with Phoenix. It felt like they were just sort of, the game was a little too casual until they looked up and they were down 10 in the third quarter and then they ramped it up. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's going to happen. It's a long season. But I think if you get, you're past the trade deadline, you're past the All-Star break, you're tied for second in the West, you're in a playoff race, you're getting to the final third of the season, you know, you want to see that ramp up a little bit.
In terms of good things, well, hey, Jaren fouled out, so there you go.
You got every second you said out of him, and that's all I ask.
Exactly right. But then you also
they like to say next man up. You got to practice what you preach, man.
That's
just
right.
Play until you can't, and then it's next man up.
So that happened. Brandon Clark was good. Santi was good. But we had Jalen Wells finishing games. That was an interesting twist, and doing it with poise and aplomb.
Yeah, Jalen Wells reentered the chat in terms of, like, you know, closing lineups for the Grizzlies. And this is something I think we talked about yesterday. I've been tracking this since the trade deadline. And so they played four close games since the trade deadline, games where you cycle back to a quote-unquote closing lineup. Mm-hmm. And this it's interesting. There's two things stand out about that. One is that Santi Aldama has been in every single one. And I think it's become clear now that he is the quote-unquote sixth man, but he's also the fourth man.
He
plays that classic six-man role, but in terms of your actual pecking order over the course of a game, he's your fourth man, and he has solidified himself in that. And then it's up for grabs in terms of who the fifth guy is, and, you know, that's matchups, that's who's playing well, it's different things, but it's literally been four different guys in all four of these games. It was Vince Williams, it was Brandon Clark, it was Luke Kennard, and then it was Jalen Wells. And I think the only reason to doubt Jalen Wells is that he's a rookie. And by the way, that's a totally reasonable reason to doubt him in terms of playoff basketball, is that he's a rookie. But that's sort of it. Like, he sort of does this game after game after game and plays that sort of 3-and-D role. And so I thought he was good early too, not just late, but right. It was notable that he was good late in the fourth quarter and in the overtime of a game like that. And I think that's a game that really does a lot for him in terms of the faith you have in him getting those opportunities again going forward. You know, that was sort of a test, and that was a test that he passed in a major way. So I thought it was really impressive, Jalen Wells, in that game last night.
All right. From the Suns' perspective, it's sort of interesting. I do think they were coming off of an embarrassing loss to Toronto. I felt like it was a pretty good version of a pretty disappointing Suns team last night. But if you look at the standings now, we had talked about, and you'd talked about, how there would be some team at 11 that was, you know, fully intended and expected to be in the playoffs and maybe as high as 6. And honestly, that looks like it's the Suns now. It doesn't feel like there's that much more suspense, though. With Wemby out and the Suns in spiral, do you think the 10 are the 10 in the West?
Yeah, and if you go back to the beginning of the season and think about expectations teams had, it's also New Orleans. New Orleans is so far past that line, we don't even think about them anymore. But that's another team who, like, before the season was thinking they were going to be a playoff team. Yeah, I mean, it's only 2.5 games, but I just have that Suns team, it's hard to have any faith in that Suns team. And they shot the cover off the ball last night. That wasn't just about the Grizzlies' defense. It was partly about the Grizzlies' defense, but also that team, for all of its problems, has a lot of talented jump shooters, and they were all, like, shooting, right? Like, it's no shock when Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, Grayson Allen are making jump shots. And so they were all making them last night. But that just team, just the chemistry, the physicality, the defense, the toughness, it's just not there. And, like, is it possible that you know, Dallas or Sacramento hits a rut and they start plummeting down too, and then it's a race going down, and someone's got to finish, you know, ahead of the others, and maybe it's Phoenix, I guess. I don't have a lot of faith in it. So, yeah, I think the 10 are probably the 10.
In the meantime, you got the Lakers. Obviously, Luka gets the win over Dallas last night. They are now 15-4 in their last 19. And then you've got Golden State, which since the Jimmy Butler trade is 6-1 with a plus 17 net rating since the trade. Who's scarier?
And they passed Dallas in the standings last night. They moved up to 8, and now they're only half a game out of 6. I think, I don't know, man. I should have said to Drew this morning when we were potting that he may be asking if he's ready to go back to San Francisco again. Because he was just there for the All-Star game.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, we could get a
Which would be the most dramatic? Forget who's beatable or whatever. What's the most drama, Phil? Just Lakers because it's the Lakers or Warriors because it's Draymond? And what's the first
round? I have a hard time seeing a Lakers first round series at this point.
Too good.
And so I think Warriors is probably it. From a Grizzlies perspective, it's Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, the Minnesota feels about Memphis the way Memphis feels about Golden State a little bit, you know, in terms of the history. And so, like, that's interesting in a different way. I can find at least that's sort of interesting. With the Clippers, like, you fear it, and also you have no interest in it. So, like, I'd almost rather be going
exactly
State
right. Yeah.
The Clippers. I'm starting to eye the idea. I mean, we've been talking about wanting to be the 2-3 because then you can avoid Oklahoma City until the conference finals.
Uh-huh.
I'm starting to rethink that. Would it be so bad to fall down and get a 4-5 first round series against Houston? And then, like, if you get Oklahoma City in the second round, like, whatever. It's like it's all gravy at that point. Like, if you lose, it's like, whatever, we lost to the Thunder. You're always going to lose to the Thunder whenever you find them. And if you win, it's incredible. And so, I don't know, maybe that's not so bad to be in a 4-5 against Houston. Would you rather play Houston than the Warriors or the Clippers, you know? I'd rather play Minnesota, but, yeah, I don't know.
I'd rather play the Warriors.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather play the Warriors.
Stop me when this is a good team. You ready?
What?
Chicago. Milwaukee. They lost to Dallas when Kyrie went nuts. Houston is in a backslide. Sacramento. Dallas. Charlotte. Like,
you're talking about teams that
that's the Warriors with Butler. Like, I'm not saying that I think they are improved, but I'm still not terrified of them. What I am terrified is they haven't won a game in California.
Right. I do think I think about what the Warriors might be in a playoff series if Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler what they do in the playoffs. I actually think about that a little bit more than I sort of agree with Jeffrey with what they've done. I'm not that convinced about what they've done lately, but I still wonder about them in terms of playoff upside. But, like, from a matchup standpoint, it's like, you know, is Jimmy Butler going to be the guy who puts the clamps on Ja? I don't know about that. And, they, you know, they don't really have a good pure backcourt defender anymore. They're not super big. And so, like, am I that worried about Draymond Green guarding Jaren? I don't know. The matchup stuff is not that bad. From a pure matchup standpoint, the Clippers feel like a worse matchup than the Warriors. But the Warriors just have those dudes, you know?
I like the way you put it with the Clippers. You fear them, and there's no interest. It's a deadly combination. By the way, shout out to your you like the Pistons before the season began. They've now won the rampaging Pistons. They've now won 7 in a row. Your thoughts on what they're put together?
Well, they've won 7 in a row in a somewhat different – they've done this in a somewhat different way because, like, Jaden Ivey got hurt, and I thought he was going to be, like, their second-best player, and that's not what happened. Jalen Duren has come around. He was a guy I was sort of high on. He was high on my list of guys the Grizzlies to try to trade for if he were available, which he wasn't. But he kind of got off to a bad start, and he's come around and been a lot better lately. But it's been about Cade Cunningham ascending to an all-NBA level, which is what he was always supposed to be as the number one overall pick. And then they, like, put shooters around them. Malik Beasley, a guy who I'd always kind of liked, but has been a journeyman, is having a great season for them. And they put shooting around Cade, and they have, like, a coach in Jamie Bickerstaff who actually wants to be there and is actually trying. And that helps when you try, and it goes a long way. And so, and part of it's the middle of the East is just sort of, you know, Orlando's underperformed or whatever. I don't take the Pistons super seriously, but it is impressive what they've done.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Did you see, speaking of the NBA, I didn't ask Chris about this because – I think I would have known his answer. Did you see Woj is auctioning off his phones?
I did see this.
The phones with which he used, that you used to break stories, Jeffrey,
right.
you can, and it's all for the benefit of St. Bonaventure, which is, of course, now, I don't know what his official title is, it's a general manager or consultant or whatever it is. He helps build the St. Bonaventure basketball program that he graduated from St. Bonnie's. And so he is, you can buy a Woj phone. Now, that wouldn't have a lot of appeal to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have a problem with him doing it.
No,
there were a lot of people
not
who were like, this is so self-serving. I don't care about that. Like,
no,
he's raising money. Who cares?
He's raising money to help his program.
I don't care about that at all.
No, not at all. And I honestly admire the turn he's taken in his life. I don't think it's easy when you are as prominent as he is and as important as he is to the daily life of the NBA to just step away, even if you've got a giant pile of money. You know what most people want? More money.
Yes.
You know, even if you got all the fame in the world, know what they want? They want more fame, or they want it to, it's the drip, drip, drip in their veins that they want it to continue. I don't think it's easy to step away. So I admire what he's doing. And by all means, if he can sell those damn phones and make money from them, good for him. I don't need one myself. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk to Sam Hardiman about what is happening in the city. We will do that next. Before that, I will tell you, you know what's a nice thing to do? It's nice to be able to talk about places that I use. Robert Owen Jewelers, O'Call, places that I use, love. And Leaders Credit Union is another one. Like, I wasn't, in fact, looking for a new bank when I started talking about Leaders. But then Claire moved here, and Claire was looking for a new bank, and her son Conroy wasn't looking for a new bank. And all of a sudden, we got accounts at Leaders, and they're great. And they have a there's a Bartlett branch. That's where we opened accounts. And then there's an Arlington branch, and that's brand new. It's the brand new branch at Arlington. And I think you'll find what we find. It's the apps are great. The rates are great. The people are great. And it stands to reason, because as a credit union, you're a member, you're not just a customer. It's Leaders Credit Union. Look into it yourself. Leaders, you can check them out online, leaderscu.com/ESPN. Sam Hardiman coming up next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman covers the city for the Daily Memphian, joins me. Now, one hockey question, Sam, because that's partly what you... I can only talk hockey with you on the radio. We know the TV numbers for the Four Nations tournament were massive. The question is, does it create momentum for the NHL that spills over into regular season viewership and interest? What's your thought?
I'm hopeful, but I'm skeptical. I don't think it'll happen. I think, like, I wish the playoffs were a little closer, right? Like, because the playoffs
have the same intensity.
Yeah, that same intensity. Because, like, now you go watch, like, a regular season hockey game and they're scoring 8 goals. You know, it's a little different, you know, than, you know, you're watching two of the best, you know, teams with the best, you know, when you watch that Canada-U.S. game, the intensity, like the defense, was so good, and it was because of the best players in the world just really wanted to win that game.
Yeah, I think sadly, I think it's a little bit like the Olympics. You know, like the Olympics doesn't create a great interest in women's gymnastics after the Olympics end, right? Like, I think a lot of that was the nationalism stuff. You know, it was the USA against Canada, and then of course the games were fabulous. So I don't think actually it's going to take a great, you know. It's gonna get a lot of people into hockey fans. Although, what a great sport! Yeah.
No, it's a great sport. And to your point, though, I think it may develop some of these characters, right? Like, particularly on the U.S. team, like the Tkachuk brothers.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
The good thing is like we got like essentially a year until the U.S. national team picks up, you know, again, because they got
the Olympics coming, and now people know the Tkachuks. Yep, I think that matters.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. You wrote a piece yesterday, went up, I believe, where the mayor was on Reddit. He's been doing these, going to different neighborhoods, answering questions from people. And now this was on Reddit. He decided to do it. What was behind that, by the way? And how much, like, what was the scene? How many people asked him questions? What was it like?
Yeah, so, you know, what's behind that? I think he genuinely, you know, I've bothered him a little bit about this. And, you know, I think he genuinely wants to hear from the public. I think he genuinely wants, like, feedback, and he wants to answer questions. It's interesting because, like, he's much more of a digital native at age, I think, 44, 45 now, compared to his predecessor, Jim Strickland, who sort of just wasn't much of a digital native, was very kind of analog, old school in that way. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting in that sense. In terms of the amount of people that, you know, I can't count Reddit users as like individual people, but it seemed like he got dozens of questions. There's not hundreds of questions, right? Like, yeah, people were really super duper interested. There were a couple of like funny ones where like prove it's you, and I think he like posted a photo of himself to like make sure it was clear that it was him.
So you just picked out a selection of, because you have a piece up where you some of the highlights. You just grabbed some of the more interesting questions and answers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I wasn't gonna do like that. It gets a little long if we just, you know. And I know we are a digital website with no space limitations, but we kind of do have space limitations. My editors certainly have you know, limitations on how much I can write. So we picked a selection and. Some of them are really interesting.
Right, I'm going to ask you about a couple. I'll leave. People can go. I take it they can probably go to Reddit and see the thread, but they can certainly go to the Daily Memphian and catch the rest of these. But I'm going to ask you about a couple that you brought up. One was, and you led with this, he has talked about something, or someone asked him about something, that if you land in Memphis and drive away from the airport, it strikes you that this is not a particularly attractive way to enter the city of Memphis. And so he was asked about that. What did he say?
He said, essentially, yeah, my team's looking at beautifying, because you have Plow Boulevard, which is your approach to the airport, right? And you have that sort of horrible center lane. It's not a center lane, but it's a median that isn't really a median. It's like gravel and dirt. I've done an illegal U-turn there once. And it's just horrible. And that stretch of road is very popular. And he said that we're looking on beautifying it, and we're looking on making it a better front door for the city. And the reason I led with this is because, like, this is something you and I hear, Jeff, a lot from people of, like, you got a recruit coming into town, right?
Yep.
And you pick them up at the airport. And if you have the Uber driver pick them up, that the person's certainly going to take that route. And on the way, the Uber driver's probably going to complain about crime, you know? And it's really not the greatest impression of the city. And it's a pothole-ridden road. I mean, multiple times in my, you know, experience in Memphis, I've come back from a trip, and I've just been sort of like Debbie Downed by that road.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's, you know, some of my bias here showing of like, that's, you know, something I don't like about the city. And I think it kind of speaks to, you know, the mayor has been talking a lot about blight. You know, he's done a lot of litter pickup himself. Like the mayor has been out on the streets, literally picking up litter in different Memphis neighborhoods. And has, you know, sort of started this Own Your Block initiative where he just, you know, has churches and other community organizations, you know, pick up litter around their streets and around the area to make it prettier and to return to, you know, those, you know, fabled days, because people talk about it all the time, but Memphis was the cleanest city in America, right? And now it's certainly not. And so I think it's really interesting, and it's sort of another one of these things where you and I talk about downtown a lot on the program and how that's sort of, the mayor's called that the front door to the city. Well, that stretch of road on Plow Boulevard is certainly, you know, a front door to the city.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find it, I actually, when I come back to the city, I breathe a sigh of relief, because particularly if I've been in a big city, the traffic is so much easier, whatever. I mean, apart from the speeders on 240, just getting around Memphis takes no time at all, whatever else. That's all great. At the end, the various entryways to Memphis are all pretty awful. Like, if you enter from the west now, and you come in, is it 55, to the south of the city, there's all that construction. It's a tangle of mess.
Right.
That's a disastrous way to enter the city. I actually do like coming from the west. If you cross, like, the skyline looks pretty good. Like, the skyline from the west looks pretty good. But the tangle of construction and mess and whatever else. And then, yes, the airport's a disaster. So, not the airport itself, but the entrance from the airport. Anyway, okay, the next question someone asked him about, and I don't know how many he got about this, but Elon Musk is a polarizing figure these days, understandably so. And yet, here he is. He's plunked down XAI in Memphis. And so... Does one what did the mayor say about the fact, I suspect that he does not, probably doesn't weigh in on Elon Musk's, what he's doing nationally, but what did he say about, you know, what if there's any connection between all that stuff he's doing and XAI?
Yeah, I mean, first, I mean, the Reddit situation regarding Elon Musk was overwhelming. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if 10% or more of the questions the mayor got were about XAI and Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And the mayor, you know, took a very political tact here, and I don't say that in a jaded sense, but in a kind of like clear self-interest of Memphis sense, right? Like he said, we're talking like about two things here, and I'm paraphrasing. I mean, you can read the whole quote on Reddit, or you can read it on our website. But he's like, you're talking about two different things. You're talking about a billionaire with an outsized personality, and then you're talking about actual investment in Memphis, Tennessee. And he's like, I try to separate the two things, right? I'm more focused on the investment in Memphis, Tennessee. And that's essentially what he said. And he noted how much money XAI has put in there. The mayor is putting a $10 billion figure on it, the $10 billion in terms of actual investment from XAI into Memphis. I've heard 12, you know, that's a big difference, but it's also not that big of a difference, and it's clearly double-digit billions of dollars. And then he also mentions, you know, XAI as a sort of citizen of Memphis has agreed to fully 100% come off the grid when times are stressed and have battery power to do that, and the mayor has mentioned that multiple times, and he did it again. And then he also noted the stewardship of the aquifer in regard to the fact that XAI is now going to, on city-owned land, build an $80 million gray water facility, water recycling facility, to save what would be, you know, over the course of, you know, decades, billions and billions of gallons of fresh water for future generations, right? So that's the answer the mayor gave. You know, it was kind of funny. There was one Reddit user was like, it's a very PR answer. I wanted the off-the-record answer because, you know, the mayor was going to give that off-the-record answer in this giant public forum on the internet. but it was funny, but it was sort of what you would expect from the mayor.
Yeah. All right. People can read that piece, and they can actually go read the Reddit thread as well if they're interested. While on the topic of XAI, you did write a piece about they have leased these 552 acres from the Economic Development Growth Engine. What are they going to do with that? We've gotten some hints.
Yeah, so yeah, my colleague and I, Sophia Surratt, spoke to Brett Mayo, who's essentially helped lead the build of Colossus, which is what they call the supercomputer. And, you know, they had leased that acreage back in October. And people for months have been like, what are they going to do with this 552 acres? What are they going to do? And so we had an interview. I asked him the question, and he said they're looking at solar and battery storage and maybe building something to operate out of on the site. And so 552 acres is a massive amount of land. However, for solar farm, it's actually not that big. And, you know, XAI has giant power needs, and people have been clamoring. We've talked a lot about the gas turbines they've relied on down in Southwest Memphis. People have been clamoring for them to use solar. XAI has been using battery power Tesla Megapacks the entire time they've been here, and have access to those in maybe a way as a Musk-related company that others don't, or at least a pretty good supply of them. And so, you know, Mayo said, we're looking at that for solar and battery storage. And so that 552 acres that they've agreed to lease to purchase from Edge could be used for essentially what is renewable energy to power this massive supercomputer.
Where is this, by the way?
So it is in Southwest Memphis. So if you're the Electrolux facility is on Paul R. Lauer Road. If you continue south on Paul R. Lauer Road, excuse me, it's a tricky one. There's a further 552 kind of vacant acres surrounded by rail lines, and that is, I mean, this is deep Southwest Memphis. I mean, this is practically inside the Mississippi River, and that's where this is. So it's relatively far away from people. Westwood and Boxtown are close by, but as the crow flies, pretty close on roads, not very close at all.
Okay. The other topic, and I'd touch on briefly here, the task force has been named, headed up by Bernice Donald, former federal judge, to guide the police to in the wake of the Justice Department report, finding all sorts of issues with how they go about policing Memphis. What's the news there?
Yeah, so the the mayor has named that group of people in this task force that Donald would lead, it's certainly an interesting list of folks. You have academics, you have former members of the police department, you have some activists, some segments of the community have said this is not a progressive enough looking list, a justice focused enough list, if you will. What I think is really interesting is now that we've named this list, and I think the big question going forward is, what is this task force going to do, right? Because the city of Memphis sort of famously did not enter into an agreement in principle or a consent decree with the Department of Justice. The mayor said, city attorney Tanara Gibson said, that's way too expensive. It's not going to be effective. It's not going to get the reforms that people want and maybe the department needs, and it's just going to cost taxpayers money. So they're taking this alternative route, appointing Judge Donald, who has a long history, obviously, in the community, and, you know, the trailblazer on the bench. But this task force operates outside the legal system. And to me, it's really unclear, and I think to a lot of journalists in town, it's really unclear, if this task force comes with recommendations, what binding do they have on the city of Memphis? If you're contracted by the city of Memphis could potentially, and this may get me in trouble, say, oh, that's nice, we may not do that.
And do they have access to all the information they need? Will they have, like, at a granular level, access to everything that's going on inside the police department, which you'd think you need even to come up with recommendations?
Yeah, see, that's a really good question, Jeff. And, you know, it kind of brings us to the Tyre Nichols civil lawsuit. Attorneys for Tyre Nichols' family and estate have been fighting with the city's attorneys in court for really granular information regarding the Memphis Police Department. And the city is sort of, you know, not given all that information, according to those attorneys. And so, to me, I would be really interested, what information is the city going to hand over to its own task force, knowing that information is public record and could be used by attorneys that are currently suing the city for a heck of a lot of money?
Sam, I appreciate it, man, every single week. Really do. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian on Twitter or X at Sam Hardiman. Read him over at the Daily Memphian. In the meantime, if you've got a friend who has been trying to sell their house and you ask every time and they still haven't sold it, still haven't sold it, still haven't sold it, do him a favor. Pick up the phone. Tell them to call Josh Heisa, 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147, and the team at Keller Williams Realty. Your friend can be yet another one of Josh's success stories. I've told you about a lot of them, but Josh knows how to sell houses in this area. He knows how to market. He knows how to put together a plan that will get your house or your buddy's house sold. Don't let it sit out there forever. It's Josh Heisa, 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers.com. Got to take a break. Back in a moment, 92.9 FM ESPN. Show Tigers tonight. They'll take on yet another owl, Jeffrey. The Owls of Rice at FedEx Forum, so that will happen. And the Combine is ongoing. We don't have any time to talk about it, though, do we?
We do not have
much
time.
Feels like we don't have any.
Or the NFLPA survey.
Maybe tomorrow.
Maybe
I was
tomorrow.
Distraught about the Bills, some of the Bills' grades.
Just go read the Patriots stuff. You'll feel better.
Yeah, but they got a new administration and a new coach.
Yeah, but they're not happy with ownership.
By the way, in this whole debate about if you can play any position you want in the league, should you be a corner or should you be a star? I mean, a wide receiver, right?
Yeah.
Highest paid corner in the league, Patrick Surtain, $24 million.
Yeah, I don't understand. This was never a question.
Jamar Chase is going to make it $35
million. Yeah, this was never a question.
Doesn't matter which he's better at.
Right.
If you could be elite at both, you'd be an elite wide receiver because you get paid more.
Absolutely.
All right, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on 99 ESPN. Speaking of NFL wide receivers, Calvin Austin joins their program today. Kevin Cerrito will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright & Company. CJ Hurt's going to join us during the second hour. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. Our work for now is done.